From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
If you want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the sun, white sand beaches, palm trees, piña coladas in the tropical and beautiful Tampa Bay area, in the state of Florida, on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, sitting.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 24th of November, 2014.
You have an incoming transmission.
Revolution will not be televised.
The voice of news information has been.
The purpose of this program is to bring vital news.
Welcome. I'm your host, Mark Skogman, with associate producer and occasional host, Terry Weeks. Happy Thanksgiving to all our Spectrum 360 listeners.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
What?
He is the most interesting man in the world.
You're so ugly, you could be a modern art masterpiece.
Okay, enough of that. Spectrum 360 is copyright 2014 by Mark Skogman. Copying and sharing the Spectrum 360 podcast for personal use is authorized. Okay, on Spectrum 360 in this edition, segment one, a live roundtable discussion. The Ferguson grand jury decision is going to be discussed with Mark Skogman. That's myself. Spectrum 360 co-host and lawyer, Terry Weeks. Revolutionary Road host, the Reverend Bruce Wright. Okay, that's going to be the roundtable discussion on the Ferguson grand jury. Now, we've already heard the decision by the grand jury has been announced. As of shortly after 9 p.m. today, that's Monday, the 24th of November, 2014, it was 9 p.m. Eastern time. And my understanding is that there is some civil unrest happening around the country as we speak. We're attempting to monitor this situation closely. There's a peaceful protest outside the White House. There's chanting, hands up, don't shoot. There's protests outside Chicago police headquarters. Protests in New York City, Oakland, I believe that's Oakland, California, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia. And in Ferguson, there's a police car on fire, and there's tear gas being shot, and there's reports of shots being fired. Now, we have not had time to confirm any of this information, But this is preliminary information we're getting on the reaction to the Ferguson announcement tonight on the decision by the grand jury. We're going to have a discussion of that in roundtable fashion in a few minutes. So, the second segment is going to be a pre-recorded song. We're going to feature One by One by Emma's Revolution. I believe that was written by Pat Humphreys. The School of America's Watch Vigil just happened this last weekend. That's Friday the 21st of November to Sunday the 23rd of November, just yesterday, in Columbus, Georgia. It happens at the Columbus Convention Center and at the main gate of the Fort Benning Army Base. The organization's website is www.soaw.org. Now, the School of America's Watch Vigil, it's an overall event that usually includes about 100 individual events that include workshops, teach-ins, lectures, plays, concerts, meetings of peace organizations, and culminates in the dramatic demonstration at the gates of Fort Benning on Saturday and Sunday, demanding the closure of the School of America's, now named the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or WINSEC is the acronym. The school is nicknamed the School of Assassins. That should tell you something. This is the school on the Fort Benning Army Base that trains police and military personnel from Central and South American countries, then go back to their countries and suppress, oppress, attack, injure, torture, and murder their own citizens with U.S. taxpayer finance training. We'll play the theme song for the SOA Watch Movement One by One. This is a very moving song. I can barely listen to it without getting tears in my eyes. We're going to have that. Segment three is a pre-recorded interview with Stephen Smith, the president of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, recorded on Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2014, in Williams Park in St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Pitchforks and Torches Rally against the Duke Energy ripoff. Interesting. Yeah, that I was there. That was a rather interesting thing to hear. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy website is www.cleanenergy.org. And Dr. Smith, he will address the issues that customers have with the Duke Energy Company. Here's a preview. What was this event about today here in Williams Park in St. Petersburg across from Duke Energy?
Well, it was a pitchfork protest to allow Duke customers to send a very clear message to the company and to decision makers and elected officials that they're fed up with Duke's mismanagement showing up on their bills and causing their bills to go higher.
Okay, and then after that, to wrap up the program, the final segment will be a film review of Food Chains. I saw the film Food Chains this last Saturday at the Veterans 24 AMC Theaters on Anderson Road in Tampa. It was excellent. Spectrum 360 will review the film ourselves and play the post-film live discussion and question and answer session that followed the film. This is a Spectrum 360 exclusive. Go see this important film. Discussion and question and answer session will feature the CIW member Sylvia Perez, interpreter and moderator Joe Parker, and local activists Rachel Tyree and Jimmy Dunson. Here's a preview.
We know our economy is stronger when we reward an honest day's work with honest wages.
Okay, let's get right to our roundtable discussion after this brief break to get things set up here. And then we are going to roll like we never have before. Okay, thank you very much.
Come with me now. Come with me now.
Okay, segment one, this live roundtable discussion between myself and co-host and lawyer Terry Weeks, and of course the well-known Reverend Bruce Wright. Terry and Bruce, welcome to the program.
Glad to be on, Mark.
Thank you.
I'm nostalgic.
You are. I suppose you are. Well, I want to congratulate you on a great revolutionary road. Number one, you had a great engineer for the program, and then you had a great guest, Bobby Seale. I don't know which one was better. Not. Okay, I'm joking.
Was that masked engineer?
Yeah.
Pay no attention to that man behind the wall there.
Yes, it was me. I'm joking. But that was great. That was a great program. Probably the best Revolutionary Road I've heard to date.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Bobby Seale was very informative, and he was telling the truth about the Black Panther Party, and it relates really directly to the subject of our roundtable discussion right now, tonight. So let's get right to it. What are your opinions on the verdict, or not the verdict, but the finding, the decision of the Ferguson grand jury not to indict Darren Wilson for murder or any other crime?
Well, I think it's a terrible injustice that's been done now to Michael Brown's family, to the community of Ferguson, and an affront to African people throughout this country and really throughout the world, as well as all oppressed peoples. It unfortunately shows again that the blue wall of silence, the ability of law enforcement to protect and keep from prosecution its own. And, you know, it's clear whether there were some, and of course I'm speaking from a more of an experience opinion here, not the legal opinion that I know Terry will offer, but I'm speaking more from my own experience. It seems like an affront, but also it seems pretty clear to me that the intention all along was to try to whitewash this, no pun intended, and to really hope that the community would settle down. But rather than that, the community has continued its long-term extended uprising. And that's what I characterize it as. And I feel that too often law enforcement and the justice system weighs in the favor of the powerful and weighs in the favor of law enforcement. So for me, I think this was a terrible injustice. I think he's a murderer. I think it's clear, regardless of whether some of the testimony may not have been eyewitness testimony. There were certainly enough eyewitness testimony. And I feel like here we have another situation similar to Trayvon and the killing of Oscar Grant. And yes, even locally, the killing of Tyron Lewis and many others in St. Petersburg, African young men that have been slaughtered by the police. I have pretty radical views, as you know, Mark, but I guess it's great to have a discussion here and maybe some wide range of views. So I've yapped enough. Terry, I'm sure, has some insight as a lawyer.
Okay, yeah. First, I just want to clarify for some people who might not be clear on how the grand jury process works. This was not a trial. We are not determining the guilt or innocence of the police officer at this time. A grand jury is only a proceeding that the prosecution conducts to determine whether there is enough evidence for an indictment and then to go forward with the trial. Now, grand juries have always been tools of the prosecution. The defense attorney's not present. There is no defense evidence put on. The prosecutor's in complete control of the proceedings. And the old adage has always been that a prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich from a grand jury proceeding. So if the prosecutor had wanted to get an indictment in this case, it would be very unusual for the grand jury not to go along with him.
Yes, it would have been easy for him to do.
So let me just say that one does definitely question the objectivity of the prosecutor in this case, and given his personal history and long family connections with the police department, some people actually had asked for his removal and replacement with another prosecutor, but that was not done. Probably that should have been done. And given he gave a lengthy speech prior to the announcement of the grand jury decision, and the lengthy speech was a heck of a good case for the defense. This didn't sound like a prosecutor talking to me. This sounded like a defense attorney. It was all very peculiar.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got to say, I appreciate your insight, because I had some understanding of what a grand jury was, of course, but I had no idea how this really was, in a sense, orchestrated and, well, I use the word whitewash. It's clear, apparently, that the prosecutor could have pursued and the grand jury would have likely went along with an actual indictment, but this did not happen.
They've always been, yeah, the prosecution very much controls what the grand jury hears during grand jury proceedings, and it's very unusual for, it's almost unheard of for grand juries not to bring back indictments. The only cases, interestingly enough, historically, where grand juries have sometimes not brought back indictments have been when there is a police officer involved. And there's a number of theories as to why that may be the case. One is maybe the grand jury just trusts the police officer. Maybe there is...
Never lie, do they?
No, they never lie. Perhaps the prosecutor himself is not aggressively pursuing that. Perhaps there are other reasons, but it's an interesting statistic.
Well, you know, police are not legally required to tell the truth, which is, you know, kind of a strange paradox. But, I mean, I understand for investigations, if you're an undercover officer and so forth, you're not going to tell the truth. You know, I mean, you're not going to say, oh, I'm an undercover officer. You can't do that, obviously. But there are other situations where I believe that the police should be truthful.
Like when they're trying to obtain a confession, they are known to lie.
Yeah, and they're not. And, and you know, giving, you know, it seemed like I don't know who that was doing the introduction of the decision. I didn't catch that. I was preparing for the program, but whoever he was, I heard what he said. I didn't catch who he was, but you know, he seemed to go to extraordinary lengths to set it up to discredit any evidence that there was against Darren Wilson. So, I mean, even the basic evidence, and I believe the autopsy evidence also bears this out, is that an unarmed young man was shot while his hands were up, and I believe that's eyewitness testimony as well. So there seems to be obvious evidence adequate to indict, but they just don't want to. And, you know, this prosecutor is known to have heavy ties to the police and legal community. I believe his father and brother were police officers, and his mother was a court clerk or jobs, similar titles. You know, so he's got heavy connections to the police and law enforcement and criminal justice system. And, you know, that is not really a background for a fair and impartial decision on this kind of a matter, this kind of a situation, I don't believe. And one other thing I want to comment on is the fact that Ferguson police, or I don't know exactly who this came from, but they were saying that even legal observers of the demonstrations that are happening tonight in Ferguson are going to be considered demonstrators and are going to not give any protection. They're going to treat them as demonstrators. Well, what does that say? If the demonstrators are out there and the legal observers are there and they're exercising their constitutional rights, that's constitutionally protected speech. And there's no law that can rescind that constitutional right. So they have the right to go out and they're already being intimidated by the police. Now, if they're committing criminal acts such as property damage and, you know, various types of rioting activity, well, that is clearly illegal. But just being outside and demonstrating, and then that is clearly legal and constitutional. And then you have the police threatening even the legal observers. That's just fascist behavior, in my opinion.
Well, I would concur with you, Mark. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I believe this is an uprising, and it's a sustained uprising that's continuing. You know, often we like to use the word riots, but that's how popular media and the power structure defines and describes this. But this really is an uprising of the people. In fact, outside handlers have tried to come in and quell this uprising, and the people of Ferguson and their supporters have told them that they need to get the hell out, that this is something that the people want to define for themselves. And when you have a situation where they are now saying they're going to criminalize legal observers, and they've already criminalized media, and they already are militarized, but this is not new, unfortunately, for people in minority communities, particularly African and Latino communities, as well as indigenous, because law enforcement has long, from the slave patrols of the Civil War period and post-Civil War activities of militia groups that later became the Klan, to a whole range of groups, there has been this long history of criminalization of African people in this country, as well as other oppressed people.
Well, yeah, that was what you're describing was what was the post-Civil War era, when that was it was basically slavery by another name. In fact, there's a book that documents that very well. That's called that's the exact title of the book, is Slavery by Another Name. That actually existed in this country till the 1940s, till World War II started.
Exactly.
We finally needed the people for labor. I mean, unbelievable.
And
here,
course,
it goes again.
And of course, with your recent experience with the School of the Americas, as well as the CIW, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, we see modern day slavery still happening. But, you know, we can't lose the context of this, because this is naked aggression by the police state apparatus, both domestically and foreign. We are doing this. We are an imperialist power that seeks conquest and manipulation and control over others. And It shouldn't be lost, though, that this killing of Michael Brown, murder of Michael Brown, and that's what I call it, and that's what many call it.
I do call it murder.
Was done by officers in regular uniform. Now, we talk about the militarized police state, but many of these murders have happened by officers in regular uniform. So, really, this has been happening. As Bobby Seale shared in the last hour during the Revolutionary Road radio show, this has been happening, and to some extent, in a more aggressive manner. He mentioned 29 members of the Black Panther Party have been murdered by the police, as well as 69 wounded. And yes, they did defend themselves. And I assert the right of oppressed peoples to determine how they struggle and how they may defend themselves. And that may offend some of my pacifist friends. But the reality is that I have no right as a white person who's benefited from white privilege. Even when I've been poor and homeless on the street, which I have, I was still treated better than if I'd been poor, homeless, and black on the street.
Well, that's true, yes.
Yeah, so the reality is that this is what's going on, and we have to have this deeper analysis. We can't just say it's a rogue cop. We can't just say it's a occasional bad apple in the bunch. It is a systemic problem, because even if you're quote-unquote a good officer, you have covered for bad officers. So that makes you complicit. Would we tell the concentration camp guard that was nice to the Jews that he was okay?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I understand. And, you know, what you're describing, you know, I think it's kind of ironic. You know, the organized crime is known for having a code of silence and a code of vendetta. Well, you know, some of those same elements actually apply.
Blue line.
Yeah, actually apply to the police as well.
Absolutely.
They have similar elements in their cultures. I hate to say that, but you know that's actually true. They do cover for each other, and you know you can understand that. You know, people in an organization tend to support each other. You know, that's just common sense, and you know you can understand the psychology of that. But still, when it comes to the point where you're covering up wrongdoing for that other people are doing, that's wrong. That's the entire purpose of the police, is to not do that.
I know. Here's the irony. One of the worst organized, militarized, armed gangs in the world is actually law enforcement in this country, or is becoming that way at the very least.
And actually, I find this militarization of the police extremely troubling.
Yes.
There are reports of tear gas being used in Ferguson. There was even a report that on CNN, reporter Chris Cuomo had to leave his broadcast due to the tear gas. And I just want to point out, tear gas is a weapon that has been banned by the Geneva Convention. And yet, apparently, now they are using it in Ferguson.
I find that very
troubling.
Yeah, yes. Well, yeah, the militarization of the police and just the blatant violation of basic constitutional rights, that is absolutely unacceptable, and that has to be dismantled. When people, they have the right to go and demonstrate on the streets, free speech, and they have the right to be protected by the police as they do it, unless they're engaging in obvious criminal acts. And that I don't support. But when they're trying to suppress people for just going out and expressing their free speech rights on the streets in public, that's constitutionally protected. And that cannot be suppressed.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I'm suspect of when they say that there have been groups engaging in violence. Of course, my feeling about violence is we're talking about crimes against people. Sometimes,
well, also property.
Yes. But sometimes it seems in our country, though, we value property more than people. The fact is that a young African man is dead, is murdered, and it happens every day in this country at the hands of law enforcement and or vigilante style groups. And any, you know, the UN has characterized it as a crime against humanity. That's why Michael Brown's family went before The Hague to hopefully, or Geneva, actually, I'm sorry, to bring it before the UN Commission, High Commission on Human Rights, because this is a human rights violation and it is continually happening in this country. And this would be characterized by any stretch of human rights understanding framework as a crime against humanity, and it continues, including the prison industrial complex.
Well, I tend to agree, and we're coming to the end of this segment, so I thank you both for, Bruce, I thank you for staying after your program, Revolutionary Road, to I'll be a panelist on this segment of Spectrum 360. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
and,
Mark.
I'll tell you right on the air that Bobby Seale wants you to call him.
Okay, I will call him.
Wow.
I told him it'd take you about 15 minutes to be able to get off the air to call him, but
certainly call him. What an honor that was.
Yeah, that was great. Great segment. Mike, congratulations on that. That's very cool. So, yeah, that's great. Okay, that's our roundtable discussion live with Terry Weeks and Bruce Wright on the Ferguson grand jury decision. I think that really sums up a lot of the aspects of this. I just hope and pray that there will be peace tonight in Ferguson. And I'm going to be saying a prayer for that once I get off the air. I'm going to ask Reverend Wright to say a prayer, too, for the people of Ferguson and for calm and peace and safety for everyone involved in that situation tonight. I will be saying a prayer to that effect as soon as I get done with this program. So we'd like to go to the next segment right after this brief break.
There is no political solution.
Okay, we're back on the air with Spectrum 360. That was a good discussion, wasn't it? Okay, we're going to have the song One by One by Emma's Revolution. This is the theme song of the School of America's Watch that just happened this last weekend.
We have come to this place to renounce this disgrace. Brick by brick, wall by wall, we will make this building fall. We have watched
one by one
the SOA,
one by one,
that someone tried
one by one
to whisk away
one by one.
But this
okay, that was the song One by One by Emma's Revolution. That's the theme song of the School of America's Watch, informal theme song. It's a great song. I get tears in my eyes when I listen to it because it's a very profound lyric. And notification of full disclosure, I am a member and supporter of the School of America's Watch Vigil. I have been involved in that organization for about 6 years now. So just so you know, we always disclose our connections to any story that we cover on Spectrum 360. So you can make your own judgment about the objectivity of the information that you're hearing. So notification of full disclosure. Okay, on to the next segment. Segment three is our pre-recorded interview with Stephen Smith, the president of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. It's recorded on Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2014, in Williams Park in St. Petersburg, Florida. Excuse me. This was at the Pitchforks and Torches rally against the Duke Energy ripoff. Oh, I love that. It was such a great demonstration. It was really fun to watch. They had pitchforks and paper cloth torches that imitated real torches, and they had some real and toy pitchforks, and they were pitchforking this large replica of a Duke Energy bill. It was just hilarious and made the point very well exactly what was happening there. So this is Dr. Stephen Smith, president of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and his take on the situation there.
What was this event about today here in Williams Park in St. Petersburg across from Duke Energy?
Well, it was a pitchfork protest to allow Duke customers to send a very clear message to the company and to decision makers and elected officials that they're fed up with Duke's mismanagement showing up on their bills and causing their bills to go higher.
Now, what are the amounts that are involved here in terms of the dollar amounts that have happened on Duke Energy customers' bill?
Well, in total, because of the Duke Energy cracked the containment vessel at the Crystal River 3 nuclear plant, and they started down the road to build another nuclear plant that they never finished, it's been close to $5 billion that are being put on customers' bills. So that amounts, right now, that amounts to about $3.50 every month that's on people's bill, and that's going up. And so customers are angry about that, and we believe that there's more charges. And what's happening is, because Duke is a monopoly, they're not being held accountable. The Florida Public Service Commission, which should regulate and control the monopoly, is not doing its job because Duke has brought a lot of power and influence into Tallahassee, and they're getting only regulators that will rubber stamp what they want.
Now, what do you think are the solutions for these problems? And the problems seem to be getting worse, and there's people like you and many people here in the park today are concerned about this too. Now, I've been down here probably at least 10 times over the last year and a half, and there's demonstrations against Duke Energy. What's the prognosis for the future, and what steps can people take to actually get this problem solved now that it's been identified so clearly?
Well, probably the most important thing can happen is people need to vote, because their vote matters. There's clear differences with some of the candidates, and you're seeing for the first time that I've ever seen in an election cycle in Florida where the utilities are actually a political football. You have a lot of the candidates that are actually jockeying back and forth about their relationship with Duke. One candidate for governor, Rick Scott, has gotten over $2.5 million from the utility companies. Charlie Crist hasn't taken any money. So that begins to give you a sense of the differences that you have. So voting, being involved, talking to your elected officials, making sure that you raise your voice, because the big monopolies will take advantage of people as long as people are quiet and don't stand up. That's why we had our pitchforks out today.
Yes, that was a very effective prop. I saw people sticking pitchforks into a large enlargement there of the Duke Energy bill. What's the next step here in terms of demonstrations? Is there anything else planned for the near future? Anything before November 4th, which is election day, of course?
Well, there'll be all kinds of things going on. We don't have any other plans right now here in St. Pete, but we will be involved in working with citizens across the state to help them understand the issues. Our organization, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, we focus on policies. We want good policies in Florida that allow people to be able to put solar panels on their homes. We want Duke Energy to be providing energy efficiency programs. They're cutting those back now. We want to make sure that they're not building power plants that we don't need, and that they're actually telling the truth to customers about what does it take to have a clean, sustainable, reliable, and cost-effective energy supply here in Florida. Right now, they're misleading people, and their mismanagement is showing up on your bill and costing you more money.
Oh, yes, absolutely. What is your perspective on the Public Service Commission of Florida? It's been called by Dwight Dudley and other politicians as a corrupt institution that's basically a captured institution that's doing the bidding of the large corporations. What's your perspective on the Public Service Commission here in Florida?
Well, that's absolutely correct. Our organization regularly intervenes before the Florida Public Service Commission, so we have a lot of firsthand knowledge of what's going on. We do not believe that the commissioners give citizens a fair hearing. They're clearly, as you said, captive, meaning that they rubber stamp just about everything that the utilities bring before them. And there's really no accountability because they're appointed by the legislature and they're not being held accountable for their decisions. This administration for the last 3 years has turned a blind eye. We talk about it, calling it utilities run wild, gone wild in Tallahassee, because the Public Service Commission is not regulating the monopoly utilities, and that's what they're supposed to do. So we really don't have the checks and balances, the regulatory safety net that we're supposed to have in place, because Duke, Florida Power and Light, and other big utilities have used their money to influence the politicians in Tallahassee, which then has backed off the Public Service Commission, and the commission is just giving the utilities what they want.
So obviously you think electoral politics has a major role in this. Are you optimistic about making progress in the election cycle that we're in right now that's going to end on November 4th?
Well, we're hopeful. It's a tough. There's a lot of money in politics, unfortunately. But we are seeing these issues being vetted and discussed, which is a positive sign. Hopefully we'll see some elected officials that will actually begin to respond to what the people want and start to rein in these big monopolies and not let them continue to put mismanagement on people's bills.
One last question. What do you think is the future in terms of like the medium or longer term future, say the next 3 to 5 years? What kind of progress are you hoping to see? And what are you hoping that citizens will do in terms of Duke Energy in that period of time?
Well, we really believe that Florida is on the cusp of becoming an absolute leader in clean, renewable energy, particularly in solar power. Florida is about to become the third largest state in the United States. It has this tremendous solar resource, and there's a lot of pent-up energy of people who want to take advantage of this and make it the Sunshine State, make it a leader again. So we believe that we're going to see that begin to unfold over the next few years. This election will be seen as a turning point, I think, in moving in that direction. So we're cautiously optimistic. We plan to be here making a difference and advocating for good policies that will move that along. But we need citizens' voice because we're only one group. We need everybody to raise up and say they want choice. They don't want the monopoly to control. They want to make sure that they can have a choice to use clean, renewable energy and have good energy efficiency programs so that we can see Florida regain the Sunshine State leadership.
Stephen Smith, thank you so much for speaking with Spectrum 360.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Good. Appreciate it.
Boom! Boom! Okay. Wasn't that a good discussion?
Always love it when we pick on Duke.
Yeah. And I have to say that that some of the information in that interview was a little bit dated because that was done just a few days before the last election day, which was Tuesday, 4 November 2014. But the rest of the information is current, and we need to pay attention to it, and that's why I played that interview when I do. We're trying to get it on the air for the last few programs, but there's been so much breaking news that I just wasn't able to get it on Spectrum 360 till now, but it's still a very good interview.
And I wanted to mention, too, that just recently the staff of the Public Service Commission has advised the commission to go along with Duke Energy and Florida Power and Light's request. They've requested to decrease their conservation standards by 90%. And saying that it's cheaper to build new power plants than it is to conserve energy. And it seems like the PSC is going to go along with that. So,
well, that's ridiculous. Okay, on to the last segment of Spectrum 360 for this program, which is Monday, the 24th of November, 2014. Remember to like us on Facebook. Go to www.facebook.com, Spectrum 360 radio program. Like us there. Also, the podcasts are at www.tantalk1340.com. Go to Spectrum 360, go to podcasts. That's TANTALK1340.com. Also, you can go to directly to the podcast website, which is www.internetradiopros.com. Scroll down to Spectrum 360, and there's a lot of radio programs there for you to listen to, more than an entire year's worth. So support Spectrum 360. Thank you very much. Okay, on to the final segment. That's our film review of Food Chains. I saw the film Food Chains just last Saturday. That was the 22 November 2014. That was the 51st anniversary of the assassination of President John Kennedy. And I just wanted to point that out. We were at the Veterans 24 AMC Theaters in Anderson Road in Tampa. The film was excellent. And this is the post-film discussion that we had with the a few members that presented the film that followed the film. It was a CIW member, Coalition of Immokalee Workers member, Sylvia Perez, interpreter and moderator Joe Parker, who did a great job that night. He always does a great job. And local activists Rachel Tyree and Jimmy Dunson. This will take us up to the end of the program. We'll try to fit as much of this segment in as we can. It's more than 20 minutes long, but you'll hear pretty close to that amount of this segment. So here you go. Listen. Important. Pay attention, please.
I work with the Alliance for Fair Food. We're a national network of people who are partnering together with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in the campaign for fair food. I know many of you are also part of that network. We just wanted to take some time after the film to have a little bit of a discussion, share some ideas about action and about various people's experiences. So we have with us here tonight a member of CIW as well as some local leaders from here in the Tampa Bay area community. So I'll let y'all introduce yourselves.
I'm Rachel Tyree. I've been involved with Student Work Alliance and community members most of my life, where I'm from. But I recently moved to the Tampa Bay area, and I'm so excited to be here with you all.
And she's now a member of the steering committee.
My name is Jimmy Dunson. I'm with the Student Farmer
Fellow. And my name is Sylvia Perez, and I come representing the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Woo! Woo-hoo! What do you think about the movie?
Very well.
It's a really beautiful thing to see a story like this told on the screen, but we know that there's still a lot of work to be done to bring publics on board. And so one thing that we definitely want to emphasize in this part is how important it is to join in the actions that continue to happen here in Tampa and around the area so that one day publics will come to the table with farm workers.
Y también Wendy's, ¿verdad? Porque también ahorita tenemos pues la campaña con los dos, con Publix y con Wendy's a nivel nacional de restaurante comida rápida, pero también es importante para seguir presionándonos, pero también estas dos corporaciones ya están trabajando pronto, pero también el apoyo de las estudiantes y la gente de... ¿Cómo les pareció el...
What do you think about the movie?
Very well.
Ya, entonces bonito de ver la película, pero también tenemos mucho trabajo todavía para que Publix se convence. Entonces, hay que seguir como las protestas o las acciones que se van a seguir adelante para que ellos también sean parte de las 12 corporaciones que están trabajando.
It's a really beautiful thing to see a story like this told on the screen, but we know that there's still a lot of work to be done to bring publics on board. And so one thing that we definitely want to emphasize in this part is how important it is to join in the actions that continue to happen here in Tampa and around the area so that one day publics will come to the table with farm workers.
Y también Wendy's, ¿verdad? Porque también ahorita tenemos pues la campaña con los dos, con Publix y con Wendy's a nivel nacional de restaurante comida rápida, pero también es importante para seguir presionándonos, pero también estas dos corporaciones ya están trabajando pronto, pero también el apoyo de las estudiantes y la gente de fe de diferentes iglesias, y por eso también estas corporaciones ya están trabajando hoy en día.
And also with Wendy's on a national level, they're kind of the major fast food holdout that we're still working to bring on board, but that they can do the same thing that these 12 other companies are doing, that they're already working as a part of this program. And together with you all, members of this community, students and young people, people of faith, all coming together, we know that we will be able to bring both publics and Wendy's to the table.
Las corporaciones que ya están participando están pagando el centavo por cada libra de tomate que compran. Y también hoy en día los trabajadores ya tienen mucho derecho que tienen cómo defenderse o cómo reportar los problemas que antes enfrentaban.
And as you started to see in the film, we are seeing changes in the fields. The 12 companies that are participating in the program are paying that extra penny per pound, and farm workers are seeing that come through for tomatoes that they're picking being sold to those 12 companies. We're also seeing that due to that code of conduct being enforced, farm workers' voices are being respected on the job. They're able to report abuses without the fear of being fired for the first time in history.
Ahora el trabajador tiene el derecho de, cuando está alto las temperaturas, ese trabajador tiene ese derecho de salir a descansar un ratito porque también han enviado una sombra para descansar un ratito cuando el trabajador está cansado de trabajar. Porque meses ellos trabajan pues abajo de las altas temperaturas cuando está la temporada.
And for the first time ever, farm workers, even just working out in the excessive heat, now have the right to stop and take a break in the shade. And there's mandatory shade on participating farms because we know that farm work doesn't stop when the temperatures get hot here in Florida. And so these are the sorts of changes that we're talking about under the Fair Food Program.
Y ahora también el trabajador tiene ese derecho de reportar desde el momento cuando está sufriendo un problema de trabajo. Y ese trabajador no es despedido. Ese trabajador tiene su trabajo en la misma compañía donde está sufriendo los problemas, pero inmediatamente tiene que como tener comunicación con la compañía o con la coalición de trabajadores.
And workers now have the right to immediately report any sort of abuse that's happening so that there can be a solution and that worker can continue to work comfortably in that farm without, again, that fear of being fired.
Lo que queremos es eliminar todos los abusos que antes existía mucho. Hoy en día ya no exista tanto, pero lo que queremos fue trabajar con dignidad y también recibir un sueldo justo.
And what we're really working toward is eliminating all of the abuses and exploitation that have historically existed so that we can work with dignity and respect on the job for a fair wage.
Entonces vamos a seguir presionando a Publix, pero también están invitados cuando tengamos como vamos a seguir haciendo protestas aquí en estos lugares donde están los supermercados de Publix y como Wendy's también.
And so we invite all of you to join us in action. We're surely going to have many more actions here in the area with Publix and also with Wendy's. So we hope that you can join us here. And then I'll also add, so we turn out, we passed out little yellow forms, and there are some clipboards going around for people who want to stay up to date. One other really easy way to add your voice to the call for justice right now, you can take out your telephone if you have a smartphone and get on Twitter and Facebook, and there are some sample messages on the little yellow sheets of paper, and you can let Publix and Wendy's know that you've seen the film and that you hope they join the program. We actually saw today that Publix is, for the first time that we know of, responding to people who are posting on their page and saying a lot of really interesting things. You didn't hear it from me, but I've heard that maybe posting on their page could be a cool thing to do too. And we also have manager letters here that we would love for people to take with them when they leave the store, the theater. It's a very easy way to show your support, to make the call to Publix to join this program. Take with you a manager letter and ask to speak to local management and then ask them to pass that on to their higher-ups. And then, of course, we have local folks who are holding it down here, and we want to extend the invitation to any of you to come be a part of Tampa Bay Fair Food and the various other organizations that are participating in this campaign locally. So with that, I'll turn it over for a couple of minutes to Jimmy and to Rachel, if you all would like to share a little bit about your experiences being a part of this campaign, what that's meant to you, and then we'll open it up for questions.
I had some of my most memorable experiences marching with the coalition, and it's a lot of times we use the word solidarity in social movements, but it's very rare that we can really act on that. With this movement, the farm worker movement, we have an opportunity to listen and learn from farm workers, and they're leading this struggle, and we can use our influence, our networks, to support them. That's really what solidarity is all about. And I encourage everybody, if you're on Facebook, go to Tampa Bay Fair Food and plug in with other Tampa folk who are standing in solidarity with the coach.
So I think we have a general consensus that the documentary was great. Mm-hmm. My experience working with this alongside the CIW and with Student Farm Worker Alliance has been incredibly inspiring. And sometimes there are a lot of images in this film tonight that maybe you could feel frustrated and angry, but I also encourage you to maybe instead adopt the hopeful tone that I feel like comes through much more. And realizing that we're in this theater together. We just sold out a theater in Tampa, in Central Florida. And we can do this together. Like, we're all here. You all have a chance to get plugged in. And I know that we're all standing up here really excited to get you plugged in. And we know that the public is going to come to the table. And they'll do it with all of us. So.
So with that, we'll open it up to all of you. We have, let's see here, about 15 minutes. Yeah.
Nate?
Yes.
My question is, well, first I just want to say thank you so much for sharing this with us, and thank you so much for the CIW for the really great work that you're doing. My question was, I was facing with them, and knowing that Congress is kind of releasing all supermarket, I was just curious as to the other supermarket chains as well as the faster chains, and whether the ones that signed the agreement are sort of just in Florida, or whether that's across the nation and
las dos corporaciones son Burger King, McDonald's, Taco Bell y otras corporaciones más que también ellos son una cadena de restaurantes, son grandísimos, son más internacionales.
So within the fast food industry, for example, the companies that have signed on are Taco Bell, Burger King, McDonald's, Subway, and Chipotle. So these are obviously really big national and even multinational corporations. And then I'll add that the largest food service providers, so companies that are providing food in places like school cafeterias and hospitals, Aramark, Sodexo, Bon Appetit, and Compass Group have also signed on. And then so far, as you saw in the film, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and most recently, and in some ways surprisingly, Walmart joined the program. And so oftentimes people ask about other supermarkets too, and many of them have received letters, almost everyone has, right? The only other supermarkets that there have been public campaigns with so far are Kroger, which is sort of in the Midwest and western part of the country. They're actually the second largest supermarket after Walmart. And then Apple, which owns Giant and Stop and Shop, which are big in the northeastern part of the country. But Publix is also the sixth largest privately owned company in the country. So we're talking about, I think, $29 billion in revenue last year. So it's definitely regional, but they're also now in six states and buy a ton of Florida tomatoes. So. Yeah.
Yeah, the Fair Food Initiative, for instance, in Walmart, cover more than just tomatoes? Because Fair Food sounds like a very broad term.
Por ahorita aquí, ahorita la temporada que estamos empezando, pues ahorita nomás es aquí la Florida, pero primero Dios, al 2015 también se va a extender el programa en los otros estados, donde Walmart compra su producto.
Right now, the Fair Food Program is specifically in the Florida tomato industry. But for the first time this coming year, beginning in the summer of 2015, because of the agreement that Walmart signed, we're actually going to look at expanding it beyond Florida and beyond tomatoes into other crops in other states where Walmart is purchasing. And that's always been part of the farm workers' vision, but it's now sort of becoming a reality for the first time.
The organizers of this program, or even some of the film directors or anything, thought about starting an online petition to Publix to have consumers protest going to their store unless tomatoes are increased by penny per pound or other initiatives as well.
Una semana de ayuno, los compañeros caminaron 200 millas y como giras y protestas, pero yo no sé qué es lo que necesitaríamos hacer más para presionarlos a ellos.
Not specifically that, but we have done and thought of a lot of different things, and so it's pretty interesting to think about the fact that farm workers have fasted for 6 days, have marched 200 miles over 2 weeks all the way to Publix headquarters, have done vigils and protests. It's really hard to say what it is that's going to finally make them see that this is the right thing to do and come to the tables. There have been some petitions, and there are, I believe on the Food Chain's website, you can add your name to a petition that does go to Publix eventually. So yeah, definitely do that.
Gracias.
Yeah.
thank you.
¿Algo más?
Well, yeah.
What reason do you think that public refusing?
Okay, that's our coverage of the post-film discussion and question-answer period with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers member Sylvia Perez, interpreter and moderator Joe Parker, and local activists Rachel Tyree and Jimmy Dunson. That was pretty good, wasn't it? I do apologize. That was recorded in the theater where the film played, and at one point there was audio playing that the theater somehow played in error, and you heard that in the background, and there was a lot of people. There was that showing of the screening of the film was actually sold out, so it was a little difficult to hear there. I do apologize for a little bit of the audio quality at times. That was the absolute best that we could get from that recording. But it worked. They made a lot of interesting points, and I was happy to be able to get that on the air tonight. Remember, go see the film Food Chains. It's still showing. It just opened this last Friday, 21 November, so it's only been showing for a few days. See it when and wherever you can. Now, next week, Spectrum 360, we are going to have more coverage of the SOA Watch, more coverage of the situation in Ferguson and across the country with the grand jury decision, and more information about clean energy. So we want you to stay tuned for all of that, because that's going to be a great time. Again, I have a great time bringing you this program, and I love doing it. I love covering these issues, and it's just a great time. And I speak on behalf of co-producer, associate producer, and co-host Terry Weeks when I say that as well. So, until next week, we're going to say goodbye and say thank you for listening to Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour, and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.